everyone. It's your host, Polly Siegel. And for anyone who doesn't know me, I'm a licensed clinical social worker, certified addiction specialist, and master level trained mindfulness practitioner. I own a counseling practice in both Colorado and Illinois, and I specialize in trauma, OCD, and anxiety. If you live in either of those two states, feel free to reach out to me for a consultation and we can begin the therapeutic journey together. Now on to the good shit. Welcome to season 3 of Shit Talking Shrinks. Gosh, I'm so excited. I will be featuring experts in the healing space, and we're discussing a variety of mental health topics, the human experience, and society at large, while creating levity along the way. Get ready to laugh, learn a lot, and change your life for good. Hello, everyone, for another fabulous episode of Shit Talking Shrinks. I have two guests that I've been very excited to chat with, coming all the way from Australia. So their voices sound way better than mine. Australian accents are just so hot. Do you guys feel that they're hot or no?
I'm originally from the UK, so Im's going to have to take all of the praise for this one.
Coming in here with my sexy accent. No, I would say it's not at all. I find it really hard to listen to. Like if I'm watching a TV show and the actors are Australian, it just doesn't hit as well as the US. I don't know, or the UK. I don't know. I just don't. Not for me, but I love the American accent. What can I say?
Right. We like what we don't have, right? And I think that applies to a lot of things in life. So one last thing about Australian accents. So I studied abroad there, you know, back in 2011, but I loved the accent so much that whenever my dog is annoying me, like whether she wants to play fetch or she wants to do something, I tell her, get fucked.
You do that really well.
Yeah.
And that,
where did you study?
I was at UNSW in Sydney.
Oh, okay, nice. Whereabouts did you live? Were you on campus or?
I was in Randwick.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah, we know Randwick.
Nice.
Okay, wait. Formal introduction. I have Sal and Im today, who are the co-founders of Good Morning. Morning. And they're grief educators, and they really want to make the topic of grief conversational and relatable. And today we're going to be focusing on non-death related grief, because an episode a few months ago featured just the topic of loss in sort of the more stereotypical way that we think of grief, which is losing someone. But grief comes in so many different forms, whether it's a divorce or losing a job. You know, we'll get into it. But I think where we want to start is talking about the myths. And debunking those myths are really important, because I think society has really given us a false impression of how to grieve. So where do we start when it comes to the myths?
I think just understanding that grief isn't just felt after a death, that's a big myth and a big misconception that society has. And we often don't associate those other types of losses with grief. So you wouldn't think, I'm grieving moving house or I'm grieving a job. We don't often associate those. So yeah, what a lot of people don't realize is you can actually experience grief that can feel similar to the grief that's felt after somebody dies. So that's the first misconception.
Yeah, people often don't realize, say if they lose a job or they have a relationship breakdown, they firstly, like Im just said, might not realize that what they're experiencing is grief, because we're not educated about what grief is and how grief shows up. So I guess a big myth is that grief is just an emotional experience, or that grief is just sadness. Grief is so much more than just sadness. It's a myriad of emotions. It is all consuming at times. And you might feel all of the emotions all at once. You might feel anger, you might feel jealousy, you might feel nothing, you might feel numb. So it's emotional, but it's also physical. It's really physical, and you feel it in your body. And I think that took us both by surprise when we lost our mums and kind of entered the world of grief. Yeah, we learned that it all shows up. It shows up in your body. And I think since then, we've gone through other things in our lives that have been lost, but not a death loss. So we call them living losses, right? So you're still alive and you're losing things like It might be even like COVID, right? A lot of us lost freedom and our sense of security and safety and our plans. And that's tiring and draining. And now that we do the work that we do, we realize that actually grief shows up in so many ways. And if you're going through a really challenging life change, a really tough circumstance, it's really important to know that you might be feeling it in your body as well as your emotional state.
Well, and it's so interesting because, you know, when we hear the word grief, it has a lot of heaviness to it and it almost feels like it has to be something catastrophic. And when I went through a health journey, I arrived at some point with the doctors where they had said to me, you're going to have to cut out gluten and dairy. And I am one of the biggest foodies you will ever meet. And I truly felt grief giving up the two food groups. And this might sound silly, this might be an eye roll, but I felt grief around like, oh my God, I'm not going to get to experience this again. And I have to do it because, you know, health is obviously more important than just the enjoyment of taste. So I think it really comes in really small ways. And then of course, huge ways.
Absolutely. I love that you brought that up. I mean, I'd be grieving gluten and dairy for sure. Sal and I try to avoid cheese and I've definitely gone through a grief period for cheese. I love it so much, but it just
pizza
doesn't
grief,
do us any good.
Carb grief. It's a thing.
Cheese grief.
Gluten grief.
Yeah.
That's another thing. Your grief is valid. People say there's a hierarchy to grief, but it's so unique to the individual. You know, you grieve things that may seem small to some people, but they're meaningful to you. So I think it's absolutely understandable. It's a big change, isn't it? It's a big lifestyle change for you. And we do grieve big changes, no matter what they are. So I think it's great that you mentioned that, but also it is absolutely valid. And I think some people might sometimes think when a change happens in their life and it's not a death loss, that they don't have permission to express grief if they are feeling the emotions and they're feeling the grief around the change. And I think that can then be quite isolating.
Absolutely. And what was so fascinating is when I was going through it, friends, I would share with them, like, I'm feeling like grief around this. This is like really shaking me up because all my favorite restaurants and all my favorite dishes, there's such an enjoyable experience to that. And they'd like roll their eyes and be like, Paulina, calm down. But I think, like you said, it's being able to really hold space that grief is very individualized and it's very specific to the person and how they're processing whatever is, you know, triggering or whatever stimuli is in front of them. So when we think about, I love how you've both phrased it around living losses. So when we think about that, when you're doing this work as educators, what does it typically look like? If you could give listeners maybe an expansive list around how it can show up.
It's much similar to, I guess, what we talk about with the grief that is felt after a death. You can feel really lonely and isolated if you're experiencing a living loss. And often there's a term called disenfranchised grief, which I think is attached to living losses as well, whereas society doesn't recognize that what you're experiencing is grief and it's not validated or acknowledged, which can make the experience really isolating and lonely. So you feel like nobody gets how I'm feeling. It's not validated. So you feel like you're in it on your own, which can be really tough. And grief is really, it is a lonely experience. Like Sal said, it can be a whole range of emotions from anger to sadness to envy of other people that can still eat gluten and dairy. It can show up in a lot of ways and ways that we often judge ourselves as well. Yeah, it's physical too. It's exhausting when we're going through big changes in our life, whether that is a loss of a job or the breakdown of a relationship, it's physically exhausting. And then when it's not recognized by society and you're having to, you know, show up and perform and do all your social activities as normal and people aren't acknowledging that, hey, you might be going through a really difficult time, it just sort of compounds that feeling of loneliness and isolation. So it can show up in a lot of ways. Sal, did you want to add anything to that?
Yeah, like it might show up as sadness, but it might show up as irritability or maybe withdrawal. You might not feel like doing the things that normally bring you joy. Grief can mirror symptoms of depression. It is separate from depression, but they do share some similar commonalities. But it might be, yeah, irritability. You might feel lethargic. You might struggle to accept the change. Lots and lots of different ways it can show up. And it's so unique to the individual. But I think it's giving yourself permission to acknowledge what has happened, what you're feeling is valid. So often I think that we just push the feelings down and just want to get on with things, and we don't always give ourselves the permission to feel it, or might think that, you know, oh, it's just gluten, it doesn't matter, you know, there are bigger things to worry about, or there are other things that people are going through. But I think giving yourself the space to actually process is really important, and something that we actually don't do enough of.
Yeah. And it makes me think about my journey through life, which has been a lot of health issues. And my health issues have created limitations and have stopped me from doing the things that I love and I care about. And to me, that is inherently grief as well. You know, for many years, I wasn't able to do any, you know, plyometric exercises or anything high intensity because of, you know, a leg condition I had. And I don't think we think of grief when it comes to health, but for me, it very much so showed up fiercely. And I just think about all these departments where it's almost like we don't give others permission to label it that way. Stereotypically, we have in our minds, well, this is grief and this is not. And it's like, it's a load of shit, obviously, because as humans, we're experiencing it. I think it's fascinating how we've been told, you know, is it appropriate to feel grief in the X or Y situations? And then we determine what's okay and what's not.
Yeah. And I think, you know, for you, you would have been grieving what you thought you could do, your plans for the future, your sense of what your life was going to be like, right? If you have limitations or the things that you wanted to do, that's hopes and dreams and ideas that might not be able to come to fruition. Of course, you're going to grieve that, right? You're going to feel that sense of loss for an imagined future or an imagined present. I mean, I'd love to know from you, like, what sort of do you think came up for you in terms of how your grief showed up when you got that? Like, how did you feel?
Yeah, well, I can certainly say with my leg condition, it was a lot of a feeling of injustice. That was really visceral for me. Like, this is not fair. I shouldn't be at 15 years old, not able to climb a hill. That's just wrong. And that injustice was paralyzing, and it really haunted me because I kept grappling with, it's not fair, it's not fair. I think that was also paired with a feeling, you know, of jealousy. You know, at 15 years old, everyone else can do whatever they want physically because their body is, you know, healthy and they have their whole life ahead of them to exercise. And so I think the injustice, the jealousy, I think there was a lot of anger with God. I remember having at 15 years old, a lot of like conversations with the universe, like, why me? Am I being punished? I think that was an experience too of I did something wrong. And because I did something wrong, now I'm being punished. So there was a lot of more of like the psychological and cognitive components of it, of almost bargaining with, well, maybe if I had not stole that candy bar when I was 12, then maybe God wouldn't be punishing me now, right? Which is silly as I look back, but at the time it was like, felt really real.
I love that you brought that up. It's actually a normal experience to have, and especially if you're young as well and you experience a loss or a big life change, you can have all sorts of thoughts like that. Like, I lost my mom when I was in my 30s. But I remember I would think, yeah, almost like it was a punishment, or exactly what you were saying, like I'd done something to deserve this. And then you feel a bit of guilt, and it can be really confusing and complex. And that's what we love to educate people on, is normalizing all of the things that can come up for you, all of the complicated thoughts and emotions and feelings. It's all normal. And often we can judge ourselves and be really hard on ourselves. But yeah, grief is incredibly complex. It's not just sadness, what people who haven't experienced loss may, you know, think it is, but it's a whole range of weird thoughts and feelings. You can feel like you're going crazy sometimes.
And I remember doing a lot of comparison, like, okay, well, this person, as a way to make myself feel better, like, well, at least I have legs. You know, there are some people that are born without legs. Like, I found myself trying to make myself feel better by looking at other people with worser conditions or experiences. I don't know if that's something that you guys see.
Yeah, I think it can be a form of minimization. And I think there is, you know, there's one element of always being, I guess, conscious of what others are going through in terms of their situation and suffering and being compassionate towards others. But I think trying not to compare is really important when it comes to coping with grief. And difficult life changes, because our circumstances are obviously so unique and individual to us. And when we compare grief in our situation to other people, we can minimize our experience. And that can sometimes inhibit us from actually dealing and coping with our grief. If we think, oh, it's not as bad as other people's, we might not process what's actually going on for us. So I think it's that giving yourself that grace of allowing yourself to accept that you are in grief, and that what has happened to you, that it's okay to feel grief. Because I think comparing yourself is so common, isn't it, Im? It's something that we hear from, we have a podcast as well, the Good Morning podcast, and we have a very big online community. And it's something that we hear a lot from our listeners and our community about, you know, feeling like they're comparing their grief to other people. It might even be family members. If you're all going through a similar situation, maybe it's a relationship breakdown or a job loss. And that can be really difficult, can't it, Im, to work through.
I wanted to say as well, what can be really helpful, I guess, if someone can relate to that or have felt like they're comparing themselves to someone else, is understanding that like change and loss doesn't discriminate. We're all going to go through things in our life. So I do it sometimes. I look at, you know, a mom and a daughter having coffee together and I'm like envious. And I'm like, oh, fuck, like, why do you get your mom? And it's so unfair. Like, but I don't know what they're going through. They could be grieving the loss of her dad or the woman's partner. Like, you just have no idea what other people are going through. And we all get dealt very different cards in life, but none of us get out scot-free. We will all go through, you know, significant changes and loss in our life. And I think that's been really helpful for us to remember, to bring us back to, you know, when we are feeling like we're comparing ourselves to other people's situations, it can be a helpful tool. And it's part of also building resilience, is understanding that, you know, change and loss doesn't discriminate as well. That can help you be a little bit more resilient in your life and also help you to feel like you are not the only one going through something hard. As we mentioned before, it can feel quite lonely and isolating, and understanding that everyone is going through difficult times as well, but it doesn't look like yours, but it doesn't mean it's not hard. So yeah, I guess that can help when people are potentially feeling what you are feeling.
I was just going to add, like, it's almost like taking the Stoic philosophy of that change happens and accepting that nothing is permanent and embracing impermanence can sometimes be helpful when we're coping with losses. Almost accepting impermanence and knowing that change is going to take place in our lives. Like Im said, no one gets off scot-free. So having that awareness that change happens, it's going to happen, but this too shall pass. The only way out is through. And that's something that has really helped us, hasn't it, Im, when we're coping with small and big changes.
I want to take a quick pause to talk about our sponsor, a company called BetterHelp. It's an online therapy platform where all the therapists are licensed and accredited professionals. It's affordable. You pay a low flat fee for therapy with your therapist, and it's convenient. Do it at your own time and at your own pace, and you can communicate with your therapist as much as you want and whenever you feel is needed. And more importantly, it's effective. Thousands of people have benefited from therapy using BetterHelp, and we're really grateful to offer all of our listeners 10% off your first month. So if you're interested in receiving therapy ASAP, click the link in our show notes and you can get started. And you get to save money. You know, something that comes up a lot in my clinical practice is a lot of self-judgment and insecurity around the right way to grieve and the wrong way to grieve. And the judgment that comes along with the scripts that I think society has given us around grief. And, you know, a lot of people say, let's do away with the 5 stages or 7 stages of grief. They're kind of bullshit and outdated. And I'm sort of a believer of that as well. But there's this, wait, am I doing this right? Wait, today I felt happy. I shouldn't feel happy. How could I feel happy? Right? There's like so much self-criticalness around every internal experience and every shift, moment to moment that happens, whether it's emotional shifts, thoughts, cognitions, behavioral shifts. I'm just curious what you could advise or what would you invite listeners to do if they find themselves doing that?
Well, we've actually written a book called Good Morning, Honest Conversations About Grief and Loss. And in the book, we literally point out all the different types of thoughts and feelings that can come up and that we judge ourselves on. And we hear from our community and people that have read our book being like, oh my God, I thought I was the only one going through that. You know, I thought I was the only one feeling envy at someone or feeling anger, and I was judging myself. So a lot of the work that we do is all about just normalizing the whole spectrum of emotions and thoughts and feelings that can come up in grief. And we just want to let people know that whatever you're experiencing is normal. And we judged ourselves. Sal and I grieve quite differently. And Sal is quite a practical griever. So there's different grieving styles as well, which we can go into. But she was able to go back to work and function and show up and do a good job, whereas I wasn't. And I was on the floor. I was an emotional mess and I was angry and all these things. And we were both judging ourselves, thinking, I should have my shit together a bit more. Why can't I do that? And Sal's like, why have I got my shit together? This is a bit weird. I'm still grieving my mum, but on the outside, it's probably not looking like that. And yeah, so we just want people to know, like, however you're grieving is right for you. There's no right or wrong way to do it. The way we grieve is as unique as our fingerprint. Like, it's so, so different. And the different grieving styles, Sal, you want to go into that a little bit more? Were you going to add something?
Well, I was going to ask Paulie if she's heard of the intuitive and instrumental grief theory.
No, please share, please.
There are loads of different factors that influence how we grieve, right? It could be your relationship with the person, family history, your personality, are you extroverted, introverted, so many things, all of these things. But there is a theory that was developed in the 90s by two researchers called Kenneth Doka and Terry Martin, and they coined these two grieving styles. They sit at the opposite ends of a spectrum. And you might be one or the other or a mix of both. It's quite common to be a blend of both. But on one end of the spectrum, there is the instrumental griever, which is somebody that might be more practical and might find they channel their grief and they channel their sort of energy and their emotions through doing stuff and maybe being of service or setting up a charity or starting a podcast or doing something that honors their loved one, but it's practical. They might find that they can talk rationally about their grief or their person without getting overly emotional, which can also then, to the outside observer, seem like that they're not grieving or they're not impacted by the loss. And then on the other end of the spectrum, you've got the intuitive griever who might be more outwardly emotional, can't help but feel and express their emotions. They need to talk about what's going on internally for them. They seek comfort from other people. They need support and they need to surround themselves with others. They might find that they verbally express their grief more so. A lot of people are a mix of both, or they might lean into one at certain times and lean into another style at others. But for Im and I, that was a really groundbreaking insight into how we grieve, because it's quite different, but also made us reflect back on different times in our lives when we had had challenging circumstances, you know, relationship breakup or a job loss or a change at work. It's interesting now with that hindsight to look back at the grieving styles and see how we cope differently. And I think that's just important for people to understand. There are so many different ways that you respond to loss, and the grieving styles is one of them, but no one is the same. We're all unique, right, when it comes to coping with big challenges. So let yourself off the hook if you're judging yourself or feeling like you're not doing it right, because you're doing it right for you, and that is the main thing.
Which grieving style would you say society celebrates most?
Probably the intuitive. I would say that there is this, I don't know if it's celebrating the most, but it's, I think, portrayed in popular culture maybe more so, or there is an assumption that grief is the crying on the floor, you know, staring out of windows, you know, sobbing all the time, very sad. I think that's probably more of the assumption of what grief is like, right? I was more instrumental in my early days. I had to sort out my mum's estate. You know, I basically grieved via a to-do list. I judged myself, and I think some people probably thought that I was unfazed, or because I wasn't overly emotional in front of people or I was able to hold my shit together pretty well, I do think that I was judged. And I think society can expect us to be unable to function. Would you say, Im?
Yeah, if you Google grief and then you go to Google images, majority of women are staring longingly out a window and men are like holding their heads in their hand. So I think that's what society expects grief to look like. But as Sal mentioned, for her, it looked like going back to work and firing on all cylinders and doing a really good job and practical task for her mum's funeral. So I think people outside may have even been judging Sal, being like, why are you not on the floor? Why are you not crying? And people can assume that if you're not crying, you're not grieving, or that you're over it, which is absolutely not the case at all. Grief can look like so many things. If you're not crying or showing outward emotion, it doesn't mean that you're not grieving.
I think, like, we spoke to an amazing psychotherapist called Megan Reardon Jarvis, who she says that to grieve is a verb. You grieve by doing. So, for example, if you lost your job, you were made redundant, let's say, some people might need to wallow in that loss and feel that emotion before they can get out there and get back on the horse and go job hunting. Some people might be upset and be feeling grief, but they might be like, right, I'm going to go straight out there, look for another job. I'm going to channel my grief into finding another job. It really is so individual to all of us. And I guess to put it in the context of what it could look like in a living loss situation, I think the grieving styles do apply there as well.
The thing, though, that I find interesting, and maybe the caveat to the one that's more im, it sounds like, of how society portrays it, feeling very emotional and overwhelmed by their emotions, is that it only feels like society gives you a certain amount of time to be that before then it's deemed as inappropriate.
Yes. Yep. Probably shortly after the funeral, if we're talking about death loss. Yeah, society doesn't really make room for grief or make space for it. And we don't quite know how to support people through it. And I think that probably comes back to those five stages as well that you touched on, or even the seven stages. Yeah, it's a big misconception is that grief is on this linear timeline and we get to a point where we reach acceptance and then we move on with our life, but that's not the reality at all. So what people may not know is those five stages of grief, they were identified by Elizabeth Kubler-Ross back in the 1960s in her book on death and dying. And those stages were actually observed in the patients who were at the end of their life. And so they were never actually intended for the bereaved. And so people who are grieving are going to Google searching, what's wrong with me? Am I ever going to feel okay again? And sure enough, everything just takes them to the five stages. So then they start judging themselves, thinking, well, I haven't, you know, hit acceptance, or I haven't moved past anger onto the next stage. And so you think that you're not doing grief right. And, but yeah, grief can take a long time to process and there's no timeline to it. How long it takes, you know, you may take someone else. And if you're grieving the death of a loved one, that's actually lifelong, which as well society doesn't realize. You'll miss them forever. You'll grieve that person forever. You know, it's important to talk about because, like you said, we don't get a long time to be emotional, or there's a long way to go in terms of support that we need, I think, definitely.
I grew up in a Jewish family. And so you may know this, you may not. When someone dies, you sit Shiva for 7 days, right? It's like Judaism gave them 7 days to like feel your feels, get it all out, and then move the fuck on. And it's just so interesting to think about 7 days.
Yes. And people come in and out of the house, don't they? And you're not allowed to wash or cut your hair. Is that right? During that time?
Yeah. For more Orthodox or observant Jews, yes, there's certain stipulations around that. Again, everyone comes to you and you, you know, in theory, receive their love and support. And then you did it. You got to get back to life.
But you're not doing Shiva for losing a job, are you? You're not doing that for the breakdown of a relationship. Like, we need some traditions coming into place for other losses in our lives too, you know?
Totally. Totally. That just came to me because I've had a few family friends in Kansas City. That's where I grew up, that have sat Shiva very recently. And I was thinking about that. I'm like, 7 days, huh? What were we thinking?
Much better than we're doing in the West. We just have the funeral and that's really it. That's We've got true. A long way to go. Yeah. We love, though, that you cover the mirrors, don't you? The mirrors are covered in the house so you can't see yourself. I think that's fascinating because when we were deep in grief, we couldn't even recognize ourselves in the mirrors. We have this joke that we got grief face. Like it actually like ages you and you lose the color in your skin and your eyes. And Sal's face, she said, was like puffy and round and the shape was different. So I think we need to do a bit more mirror covering for sure in those early months especially.
Or maybe that's just like the full embrace of like, look at the pain I'm experiencing and the mirror reflects that. That really is a testament to the love that I had for whatever that was, the love that I had for gluten, the love that you had for the person that passed. I mean, it truly is to me just a confirmation of the deep, deep, fierce love that you had for whatever is gone now. I know we're going to be wrapping up soon, but something that you may know, you may not, that's okay. I'm going to take a risk here. What do you feel like is the evolutionary purpose of grief if you were using an evolutionary lens?
Oh, we actually covered grief and sex in a podcast episode. Some people want to have sex when they're grieving. A term actually called widow's fire, where it's like kind of on heat when you lose a partner. But then also other people just couldn't think of anything worse. And Im and I fell into that camp. And so we asked our friend who's a psychotherapist, like, why is that? Why do some people want, you know, to have a lot of sex and others couldn't think of anything worse? And she said it's like a primal desire. Some people have a primal desire to procreate when they've lost. Their grief is almost serving as a procreation tool. Ultimately, you know, we are relational beings as humans. We love the grief, I guess. I don't know from an evolutionary perspective whether it's just we grieve the people that we love, we grieve our pack. I'm a bit stumped on that one. Im, have you got any thoughts?
I'm going to go for a really different answer here. I'm going to be quite woo-woo. How woo-woo can we go on your pod?
Get hella woo-woo.
Something that helps me is thinking that, and this is going to be quite controversial because a lot of grievers, like a lot of people say, like not everything happens for a reason, right? And I agree with that. Not everything happens for a reason, but something that has helped me is thinking about these big changes and these losses that we go through in our lives. Well, me personally, it's taught me a lot of lessons and I feel like I'm a much better human after going through hardship. And I know that's not the experience for everyone, but I don't know if there's some evolutionary process there where we are supposed to grow and change.
It's like a rebirth.
It is. It really is. I feel like I am a completely different person to the person that I was before my mum died. Like it's a before and after that there's a clear split in the middle of my life where that happened. I'm not the same. And in a lot of ways, I really like this new version of me that has been birthed through trauma and pain. It's taken a lot of work to get there. But I don't know if there is some process that we're supposed to go through to grow and look at life through a different lens.
That's better than my sex theory. I've just Googled it. And shall I read out what Dr. Google has spit out?
Yeah.
I Googled evolutionary purpose of grief. And the first thing that's come up is the reward center in our brain that keep us happy together, keep us bonded by making us sad when we're apart. In this sense, evolutionary biologists have suggested the protest phase of grief lasts long enough for us to search for our loved one, yet is short enough to detach when hope is lost.
That's just made me more confused.
And the existence of mechanisms like grief ensure the stability of important social bonds.
Yeah, there's something to it. I've always wondered that. I'm like, because I think about emotions all the time through evolution, because we're just animals. That's the bottom line here. And everything serves a purpose. Like crying serves a purpose. It helps the parasympathetic response get activated, right? Like it's our rest and digest phase. Everything is purposeful and intentional through the way that we've evolved. So maybe I'm just planting a seed for you guys to do an episode on your fabulous podcast on the evolution.
It's a great question. We've never been asked that question before. So I'm going to go and research that. So thanks for giving us some food for thought.
Well, I know that we have to wrap up. Is there anything else that you want to leave listeners with before we sign off?
I think just if you're going through any loss, doesn't have to be a death loss, just know, you know, it's okay to feel grief. And if you want to come and hang out in a really supportive community, you can find us at Good Morning Podcast on Instagram. And that's morning with a U. And we are on all social platforms. Our podcast is called Good Morning. And we're on all podcast platforms. And yeah.
Amazing. And just to add, I will have all of their info and the magic that they give to the world in the show notes. So you don't have to worry. It will all be there. But Im, what were you going to say?
Sal covered it off there, but just thanks for having us. And we love that you're talking about living losses as well, because a lot of people don't even know about it and doesn't get enough airtime. It's often difficult, and especially with like relationships, if you're estranged from someone or you're going through a friendship breakdown, like there's no end point to that. It's a non-finite type of loss and it can be really difficult. So it is important to recognize that what you are experiencing is grief and it's valid and that you're not alone.
Gosh, now that you brought up the last part about friend changes and friend loss, God, that hit home. That's visceral for me. That would take another 35 minutes. I'm hoping that, you know, listeners are able to feel seen. They're able to acknowledge their own internal experience by these living losses and really understanding them within themselves with more compassion. And to know that if you haven't identified it as grief, perhaps giving yourself permission to start labeling it that way, because it really would honor what's happening within. So thank you for coming on my show. I am so excited that this is going live and that people have this information. Share it with friends. It will all be on social media, and we will catch everyone later.